What's up, little psychos? I'm Investigator Slater, host of the Psychopedia podcast. Psychopedia is a true crime podcast delivering raw, real, and absolutely gripping episodes every single week. I dig deep to uncover fascinating details of heinous true crime cases while exploring criminology and psychology theories. I take you into the absolute darkest corners of the human psyche, my favorite territory, and present cases like you've never heard them before. Follow and listen to Psychopedia everywhere you get your podcasts.
Tailgate.
It's time for the tailgate.
Toss me a cold one. Nothing better than a 7 a.m. beer and an unbrushed mouth.
Your official weekend destination for all things football.
You are looking live.
The granddaddy
of them all.
NCAA.
Travis Hunter circles around down the sideline. There he goes. The most dynamic player in college football. Touchdown, Colorado.
The NFL.
Williams, pressure coming. He felt it. Looked. Saw it. Evaded it. Still on the move. Looking around. Williams is going to take off for the end zone.
It's like it's its own playground.
And now, it's time to kick off the tailgate with your host, Paul Pabst.
You ready, champ?
I'm ready for this my whole life.
On Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score and live on the Odyssey app.
Welcome to the tailgate, NFL Week 7. Morale is high. Big day of football in Chicago. Big weekend of football in Chicago. A little rainy this morning. A little thunder. Tyler, the producer, is here with me. Holding down the fort. Sun coming up over my shoulder at the Score Studios. Morale is high. The Bears win last week. We're going to get to that. The Cubs are out of the playoffs, but very promising for the future. We're going to get to that a little bit. Lots of college football today. And bonus coverage, Tyler, your boy. Right after this show, I'm heading to South Bend, going to see USC Notre Dame. A fantastic game, a fantastic setting for college football.
That should be an electric atmosphere.
It should be. Notre Dame is favored. Notre Dame's a little slow start this year. They had some tough early games, but they're in better shape. And we're going to talk a little about the Notre Dame-USC rivalry and how it's going to be going away for a little bit. And I'm also going to the Bears and Saints tomorrow. That's a great football weekend for me. Two tailgates in one weekend. I'm built for this. I'm running on about 4 hours sleep, but I'm going to go tailgate all day in South Bend, go to the game. Get up, roll back, Waldron Deck early. I mean early, probably 9:45 at the latest. Do a whole day of tailgating at the Bears game. Get on a flight, head back to the East Coast. But I'm a professional, Tyler. I've been preparing for this my whole life. I know how to pace myself. Early brat with mustard, maybe a pull of sausage, a little surf and turf, and then a couple beers, but just a nice pace.
That sounds great to me. Sounds like a great Saturday and Sunday.
Yep, and you got to pace yourself. There's a long day ahead, but it's called being a professional. You kids out there, take notes. This is the Tailgate 670 The Score. I'm your host, Paul Pabst. In about 15 minutes, my guy David Haw from The Score's Mully and Haw Show will join me to talk Bears. And we're going to dive in a little bit to the Troy Aikman topic. I've been grinding on this one all week. Couldn't wait to talk about it. I want to dive into that a little later. Before we get to the Bears and football this week, if you didn't stay up for football last night or baseball last night, you missed a lot. The comeback by the Mariners was unbelievable in late innings. Louisville beat Miami college football last night. That was a great game out of nowhere. Those Friday games kind of bite you. Miami's still in the mix, but a great win by Louisville. The Dodgers game. The Dodgers swept the Brewers. I know Cubs fans are loving this because the Brewers were talking a lot of smack, flying the L. Right, Tyler, that was a big one this week, right?
What have they done since they beat the Cubs?
They have four L's since they beat the Cubs. And, you know, Brewers, nice squad, but the Dodgers are just a bulldozer. And Shohei Ohtani last night, he starts the game off by striking out the side as the starting pitcher. He leads the game off with a home run. That's like a solar eclipse, man. You will never see that again in your lifetime in a playoff game because he's the only guy who's going to do it. Pitchers don't lead off the first inning. And usually power hitters don't lead off. But he struck out the side and hit a home run to open the game. He finished the game with three home runs and 10 strikeouts as the starting pitcher in a playoff elimination game. That's Babe Ruth stuff. And I don't know if Babe Ruth did it. People are saying it might be the greatest sports performance, playoff performance of all time. Not just baseball. You know, he's such a unicorn. You almost don't realize what kind of era we're living in right now with a guy who plays both ways and does both very well. And he's pitching again. His shoulder's okay. His arm's okay. It's really interesting. It's a fun story. Have you ever seen him at Wrigley Field, Ohtani?
Never.
I've seen him in person once. He's way bigger than you expect. He is a big, strong guy. Fascinating character. Really fun. Unbelievable job by him last night. Let's get into the lead this week in Chicago sports. Two teams with similar vibes in a couple different directions. The Cubs and the Bears. Both teams came into the season with expectations. I mean, different levels of expectations. Young talent, hope. The Cubs came in this season with, I can remember listening to Score shows, and they'd be like, man, if they could get over 90 wins, that's the goal. They did. Now, it wasn't necessarily the most pretty 90 wins of all time, but they got there. Remember in August, the offense dipped? I just look at the Cubs as a team there. There's a lot of hope for the future, near future and long-term future. They didn't sell the farm, which a lot of people were upset about, to, you know, make plays for the playoffs, to make moves for the playoffs. PCA, Kyle Tucker, that's a whole situation. I think they may not sign Kyle Tucker going forward because that someone's going to pay a lot of money for him. And then you look at the Cubs going forward, you got to feel really good about them. And then you transition right to the Bears. The Cubs lose in the playoffs, and you go right to Monday Night Football with the Bears. It's like the city morale is down. Cubs are out of the playoffs. It felt like you had a chance against the Brewers, face the big Dodgers, and see what happens. Maybe steal that series. Then the Bears go into the game, and it's a different level of hope. The Bears have a measured hope this season. New coach, really exciting new coach. A couple new skill position players. Maybe both teams are on the cusp of winning. I think the Cubs are on the cusp of the World Series. I think the Bears are maybe a season away from being a contending type team, but very good team, very good start. Three wins in a row, you got to like that. The Bears' next game, Saints at Bears. Noon on Fox, Soldier Field. Could be wet, overcast, a little sloppy from the night before. But this is a kind of game where if you're a Bears fan, you expect a win because the Saints are bad. They're 1-5. They've been competitive in some of those games, but they haven't won a lot. It's a little dangerous to walk into an NFL game expecting a win, I think, as a fan, because a lot of teams expect to win. I'm sure the Steelers expected to beat Joe Flacco and the Bengals the other night. They didn't. Joe Flacco's been on the team for like 45 minutes. How did he even memorize the playbook in that? And Joe Flacco lit them up. 40-year-old Joe Flacco, he couldn't run around the block. And he lit up the Steelers' defense, which is supposed to be good. But the Saints don't get a lot of national attention. They're 1-5. They have a decent scrambling quarterback in Spencer Rattler, but they get no pub. They come in like, this feels like a homecoming game. Remember in high school, you scheduled the team you could beat for homecoming or in college? But it's dangerous. And it does feel like a comfy win for the Bears, and that does make me nervous. They do call it, Tyler, a trap game, but that's a compliment in the NFL. If they say to you about your team, hey, man, this is a trap game, that means you've been playing well lately, and a loss can sneak up and grab you.
Do you think that term is more used in college than the NFL?
Yeah, because it's usually like Oklahoma will be 5-0, and they got to face Tulsa before they face Nebraska the next week. And like, ooh, it's a trap game. You're at Tulsa or whatever.
Kansas State's a sneaky one for them, too.
Kansas State, yes. Those are all the trap games. Hey, before Chicago takes on New Orleans tomorrow, 9 to noon, the local Ford dealers pregame show right here on 670 The Score. Olin Krutz, Patrick Manley, and Mully will get you set for the game. Then immediately following the game, instant reaction on the postgame show presented by TimberTech Decking, Railing, and Arturo Tire. All of it can be heard tomorrow on The Score and the Odyssey app. I want to go back and look at the Bears' last game because this was not a normal Bear win, in my opinion. That game was a year in the making. Bears over Commanders, 25-24 Monday Night Football. Heck of an ending. Could have gone either way. But that game was the cleanse, as I called it last week on this show. I said, you got to beat the Commanders and cleanse that Hail Mary loss from last year. And they did it. It wasn't always pretty. But, you know, I went in that game nervous against the Commanders. The Bears' issues going into the game were stopping the running game and getting a rushing attack going. Washington had a very good running game, or they did have a very good running game until the other night. Also, I knew this game was going to be a referendum on Caleb Williams and Jaden Daniels. They were taking 1-2 in the draft, which means they're intertwined forever. It's like in football, you're intertwined. Peyton Manning and Ryan Leaf are intertwined forever. They were taking 1-2. Ryan Leaf's a buddy of mine. We live 3 minutes from each other. Ryan Leaf gets asked every week about being a bust in the NFL or this and that, and he has to eat it because he was a bust. Now, neither of these two guys are going to be a bust, Caleb Williams or Jaden Daniels, but Jaden Daniels has a galactic rookie year, and he's looked at different nationally. We're going to get to that in a second. So if you look at that game, it was a really nice first quarter by the Bears. Two field goals. I always get concerned when field goals aren't touchdowns. 13-7 at the half. Daniels throws a pick in the second quarter. Their rookie running back fumbled. All was well. I felt like a very good win was at hand. It also felt a little too close. 13-7 is too much like striking distance. And then it just went bad fast. And we've seen this before. A good first quarter by the Bears, and then a bunch of messy stuff. I think the score at one point was, Tyler, was it like 13-0 at one point, Bears?
13-0.
And then later in the game, it's 24-16 with 11 minutes to go in the fourth quarter. 24 points. And you're like, this doesn't feel like it's going to work out. The rains came. The Bears score on a pass to DeAndre Swift in the left flat where he just kind of busts a tackle and they blew the coverage. He had a monster game, by the way, to Swift. He has been one of those guys who gets almost very little national attention and doesn't really get a lot of local attention except for saying that's all the running game we have. And when the rains came, it got a little sloppy. About 3 minutes to go, Bears are down two. It looked like Jane Daniels was going to lead a long drive. I think it was six plays already and run out the clock or get another score and put it out of distance. He had a bad fumble. Snap, his eyes were off the ball. It slips out of his hands. He tries to get it to the running back, and it doesn't work out. Bears jump on the ball, and the whole place, I can remember I was sitting there. I jumped up. I was like, this is it. Steal this game. I think the Bears' drive was about 36 yards. It was mostly Swift and Jake Moody, which you know you've heard on the Score all week what a great story this is. The guy was a third-round draft pick. Third-round draft picks don't happen a lot with kickers, and it worked out for a while in San Francisco, and then it didn't, and he ended up on the Bears, and he redeemed himself the other night. He became an instant legend with a 38-yard field goal at the buzzer. Wild scene, a lot of fun. A kicker being carried off the field is like something out of a high school game, but it was a really fun game at the end. A great win to steal, kind of like the Raiders game. You steal a win however you could do it, and they did. And now that Washington game is a memory, that Washington game of 2024. You know, Tyreek Stevenson probably doesn't have to be asked about it again. The Bears don't have to be asked about it again. Washington is over for the near future. Now, what was interesting after a great win like this is usually there's no problems when you win. You go to the press conference the next day. Ben Johnson has his Tuesday availability. Kayla Williams talks and, you know, all is well. I was watching that game and I knew the Troy Aikman topic was going to be a topic in Chicago. I work on a national show. Paul Papp, 670 The Score. This is the tailgate. I also work on a show called The Dan Patrick Show. So I live in a couple different lanes, Tyler. I work on a national show, so I have kind of a national eye. I'm a Bears fan, so I have a Bears eye. And I also work a little bit at The Score, so I have a local media eye-ish. I'm not here every day like a lot of the guys here are. But when Aikman was criticizing Kayla Williams, I could sense it coming. I think I texted David Haw and said, this is interesting. You know, Aikman's letting it rip. Now, before we get to the sound of Ben Johnson and Kayla Williams, I want to talk a little about Troy Aikman. Troy Aikman, as we know, is a Hall of Fame player for the Cowboys. He didn't have monster stats during his career, but he was a high-end quarterback, went to the Hall of Fame, knows his stuff. He's also been an announcer for a long, long time. You know how, you know, you kind of lose your filter when you get older and you've got something, you've kind of nailed something, you've got it, you've mastered your craft? I think he's a great analyst, not good, great football analyst. Now, I'm not in his pocket. I don't know Troy Aikman. He comes on the Dan Patrick Show regularly, but I think he's a very smart analyst. And he calls it like he sees it. Now, the disconnect is he doesn't cover the Bears every week. He covers the Bears once or maybe twice a year when they're on Monday Night Football. So he does not watch Bear games like we do, like people at The Score do, like you do at home. He watches them all week. He watched tape and did prep and probably prepped on Jaden Daniels, prepped on the wide receivers, prepped on Adunze, and prepped a lot on Caleb Williams. And he's seeing what he sees and looks at it through his filter. He said a couple things during the game, Aikman, where there was a pass that Williams led the receiver, and it should have been one of those, like, turnaround, hit him in the numbers. He did it again. And I noticed he kept saying, well, Williams put it in the wrong spot there. Williams put it in the wrong spot there. He missed Manungai on the two-point conversion on the right side. I'm of the opinion, when I watch a guy like Troy Aikman, that I have to trust that he knows more about football than I do. And if you don't think he knows more about football than you do, I think you're going in wrong. You're going in miscalculated, if that's the right word. Because he has to know more. He gets paid to do so, and he played the sport for a long time. I barely played freshman football. I think I didn't even make the roster. Now, no surprise at Marian Catholic, they didn't want me on the roster. But it kind of blossomed in Chicago. A lot of people on the internet were like, what is Troy Aikman doing? He's really lighting up Caleb Williams. And, you know, a couple things are interesting. It's how you look at a person and their body language. Caleb Williams gets critiqued for body language quite a bit. Now, Jaden Daniels, who is everybody loves Jaden Daniels. Why not? His rookie year is one of the best rookie years of all time, period. I don't even have to qualify that statement. He's one of the best rookie quarterbacks of all time. He made the playoffs. He almost got him deep into the playoffs. And Caleb Williams had a rough, I would say an up and down rookie year with a shaky coaching staff. And now he's got a new coaching staff, new position players. It is going to take some time for him to really be smooth. I've seen a lot of good stuff, and I still question Caleb Williams about the easy stuff. I would love to see him drop back and throw a 5-yard out pattern on timing 10 times a game. He can make those sports center plays where he rolls right across his body to Odunze with two toes in. Man, those are great highlights, and he can master it. I also think Caleb Williams is a fantastic fourth quarter quarterback because he knows how to run, when to not get hit. He can make something out of nothing, and I think that's what's someday going to win the Bears a Super Bowl is Caleb Williams' fourth quarter ability. That said, I think Troy Aikman had a lot of right stuff there. I think he had a lot of right commentary because he's chopping up individual plays, and he sees the play differently than we do. He's got that quarterback eye that we don't have, for the most of us. I'm sure people out there listening played high-level college football, pro football maybe, or you're a coach, and you see it differently than I do. But, you know, the Bears had to answer about it because it kind of took on a life of its own. Again, I'm a text buddy with David Haw from Mullion Haw, who will join us about 10 minutes here on the tailgate. And I was like, this Aikman thing is picking up some steam. He goes, it sure is. And they were in the middle of their show. And like, David's a very objective guy, and he talked about it a lot. But when Ben Johnson and Caleb Williams got asked about it, I was really curious to see how they would deal with it. And I think Ben Johnson got it from Pat Finley of the Sun-Times early in his press conference.
I saw you said somewhere today that you caught a little bit of the TV copy of the second half. Did the tone of coming from the color analyst there surprise you?
Maybe I just had it on mute.
It sounded like you heard some of what they said.
Yeah. No. Listen, you want respect in this league, you got to go earn it. And so that's where we're at right now. We need to go earn that respect from not only the rest of the teams in the NFL, but everybody. So that's where we are.
Well handled by Coach Johnson. Don't feed the fire. Move on. Take the win and move on and don't feed the fire. So you have to answer this question for two or three more days. Caleb Williams, he was asked a few different times about it because they want copy. They want to propel this topic on both nationally and locally. And I think Caleb was asked more about can he and the coach use this as motivation?
Is Ben using it as motivation or is it anything that's...
Yeah, I think you always kind of use those. I mean, when you're in a competitive situation, like coaches or, you know, myself or other teammates, that, you know, when people have stuff to say about you, and whether it's that week or, you know, a whole year or, you know, whatever case may be, I think you do use it as a little bit of fuel, as a little bit of motivation. I think that's always a part of it as a competitor, that goes along. But you don't put too much into it to where it affects you negatively.
Also well handled by Caleb Williams. I think he always does a nice job at the podium. He handles himself very well. He played a lot of college football and did a good job there in front of the podium. But Tyler, I'm curious, as a Bear guy and a local guy, how much Aikman heat was around here this week?
A lot. I feel like it got more attention than the game itself, honestly, with how big of a storyline, like you said, it was from last year.
It's tough because, I like to trust Troy Aikman that there's no personal vendettas, that he didn't miss a phone call from Caleb Williams and decided to be salty about it. I lean against that as a theory, but people are people and humans are humans. And does Troy Aikman not fond of Caleb Williams on or off the field? I don't know. I doubt it, but there's always a chance. What it really boils down to me is, you know, if you have brothers and sisters, Tyler, you probably have brothers and sisters out there listening to the score right now. You have brothers and sisters. You can bust on your brothers all day. You can goof on your brother's haircut. You can goof on them. But if then someone down the street starts busting on your brothers and sisters, you're like, whoa, 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 you get defensive. I can make fun of my family. You can't make fun of my family. And that's what the Aikman thing was to me. Bears fans know that Caleb Williams is a work in progress and a high-end talent. And there's things he has to work on. I think everyone could agree on that. But when you hear Troy Aikman say it over and over and over again on a national TV game, you're like, whoa, you get a little defensive for your guy, defensive for your brother, as we do in life. All right, I want to get to a few more things here before we break. This, again, Paul Papp, 670 The Score. This is The Tailgate, the best football show at 7 o'clock in the morning in Chicago. Tyler, that's hands down, right?
I was literally, you took the words right out of my mouth.
Thank you, brother.
Hands down.
Jeff Egrest from the Sun Times, I think he's going to write a story about us. The NFC North is interesting. We're going to get to that in a second. But the Bears are sitting at 3-2. Guys are getting healthy. The run defense is better. That was the biggest win for me out of the Commanders game. The running game was better. The next five games are Saints, Ravens, Bengals, Giants, Vikings. Now, I'm going to hit this a little bit more later. There are some winnable games in there. The Ravens are down, way down compared to what they usually are. Their defense is brutal. Now, it appears that Lamar Jackson is going to be back for the Bear game. Not great, but you got to deal with part of that. The Bengals. At the start of the season, you think, oh, the Bears have to play the Bengals midseason? That's a doozy. Joe Burrow, holy cow, the defense is decent, but the offense is great. Then the Bengals lose Joe Burrow. And you look at that Bengal game like, that could be a win. That could be a win on the... And then the Bengals somehow convince the Browns, the most inept franchise in football, to trade Joe Flacco to help the Bengals. If you worked for the Cleveland Browns, why would you ever try to help the Bengals? Isn't there a rule in Chicago that the Cubs don't help the Sox and the Sox
that,
don't?
That would be my number one rule if I was a GM. Yes. No in-division trades.
No in-division trades unless you're going to steal something from someone and they're, you know, fall for something. Then you got the Giants and the Vikings. The Giants looked brutal 4 weeks ago. Now they're like Jackson Dart, Cam Scataboo. They're a little promising. The Vikings, I don't know what you're going to get. I really don't know if it's going to be Wentz or McCarthy, but another winnable game. So that's the NFC North. Packers 3-1-1. Detroit loses to KC. They're 4-2. And Detroit's got a tough game coming up against the Buccaneers. Detroit could be 4-3. I picked Detroit to go like 16-1 this year. The Vikings and the Bears are both in 3-2, a bit of a log jam there. But we got a lot to get to. Coming up, college football. We got the morale meter, my Bears game prediction, and coming up in 5 minutes, joined by David Haw from Mullion Haw on The Score. That's next. This is the Tailgate, 670 The Score.
Hey, y'all. I'm Maddie.
And I'm Poodle.
And together, we host the podcast Reality Gaze.
We are two ridiculous homosexuals who love nothing more than talking about reality television
and tearing in a new one. So whether it's 90 Day Fiancé, Love is Blind, Love After Lockup, or any other trash TV show about lonely hearts looking for love, your gay besties got you covered, y'all.
New shows every week. Follow and listen to Reality Gaze wherever you get your podcast.
Let's love.
We're back with more of the Tailgate with Paul Pabst.
I love football. Love it. Love it.
Saturdays on 670 The Score and the Odyssey app.
Back on The Score. Rainy day ahead in Chicago. Football weather. Head in a few hours. So, in addition to working at The Score, which I love, I also work on a show called The Dan Patrick Show. It's a popular sports radio and television show. The past couple days, we were in South Bend, Indiana, right outside the stadium doing a couple live shows. And Coach Marcus Freeman came by and a bunch of different people came by. It was a really good time. And we're going to talk to about 5 minutes to David Haw, Mullion Haw, talk a little Bears talk, NFC North. Marcus Freeman, great coach. Notre Dame's rolling, looking really good. They've got a good quarterback, C.J. Carr. C.J. Carr, the name might be familiar. The Notre Dame star quarterback, C.J. Carr, he's a redshirt freshman. His grandfather was Lloyd Carr, the former Michigan coach. I don't know how you convince the grandson of a successful Michigan coach to come to Notre Dame, but they did. Good job by them. College football recap the week. Buckeyes handled the Illini. Indiana took it to Oregon. That was the game of the past decade for Indiana football. We're going to talk in detail about it, but Indiana rolled Oregon in the second half. They didn't just handle them. They took it to them. They ran all over them. And Fernando Mendoza, the dropback quarterback for Indiana, he's a Heisman favorite right now. He's also a draft favorite right now. If the draft were today, I think he'd be a top 10 draft pick. He's a classic dropback quarterback. He transferred from Cal. Texas beat OU. Bama's back in the mix. They got a nice win. Notre Dame rolled NC State. USC over Michigan. Michigan's slipping a little. Keep an eye on that situation. But I want to go back to Indiana football. If you grew up in the Midwest and you're a fan of Big Ten football, Indiana was always nothing. Just not an interesting football team. They'd be like 4-7 or 5-6. They would do nothing. Every once in a while, they'd get like Antoine Randall-El at quarterback from Thornton. Love that guy. But then they would just go back. You know, the Illini was always a little bit better than Indiana. And Indiana was a basketball school. Still is. They would love to be a basketball school, but they're morphing into a football school lately. So they bring in Kurt Cignetti, the coach of James Madison a couple years ago. Really good coach. 64 years old. He was about 60 when he took over, 61 when he took over Indiana. He's risen them up. He got them into the playoffs last year. He's doing great this year. They're undefeated. And then all you know what breaks loose. Penn State football, which started the season ranked number 2, they lose to UCLA. They lose to Oregon. They lost to everybody. They lost to Northwestern, right? And those losses in a row cost James Franklin his job. They went from the number 2 team in the country 9 weeks ago to their coach being fired with a monster $48 million buyout. Now, that's that trajectory. Now the Penn State job's open. Kurt Cignetti at Indiana just beats Oregon, coming off going to the playoffs. Bringing in College game day went to Indiana. Indiana football's relevant. He made it relevant. And all of a sudden, Kurt Cignetti is going the other direction, up, up, up. And then all of a sudden, you know what happens. Kurt Cignetti's agent says, yeah, that Penn State job's open in Indiana. You better step up. And Indiana did. I never thought I'd see a day where Indiana football put all their chips into the football program. They gave him an 8-year, $96 million contract, $11.6 million per year. He more than doubled his salary in a week. Wouldn't that be fun? He was making $450 grand a year 5 years ago, James Madison. Now he's making $11.6 million a year on a $96 million guaranteed contract. If he gets fired because Indiana somehow has a bad season, he gets all $96 million. Unbelievable. Indiana football said, you know what? Let's try to be a football school. Let's give it a try in this NIL era and let's give it a shot. Wild. College football today, nice slate. LSU, Vandy, Georgia Tech at Duke, Ohio State at Wisconsin. Oh boy, Wisconsin. Michigan State at Indiana, Ole Miss at Georgia, Texas Tech at Arizona State, Tennessee at Bama, USC at Notre Dame tonight. I'm heading back for that right after the show. Can't wait to get there. It's going to be sloppy. It's going to be fun. A lot of stuff going on with college football. But joining us now in the tailgate, he's the co-host of Mully and Haw right here, the morning show on The Score. I listen to every morning on my way into work. He's also former Ball State safety, David Haw. David, great to have you on. We're going to get to the Bears in a second. But I know you're an Indiana guy, the state of Indiana. I'm going to a night game in South Bend versus USC, a place you've been often. How great is the atmosphere is it there in South Bend?
It's still my favorite college football rivalry. I worked 11 years in South Bend and covered both in South Bend and at the Coliseum, which is my favorite college football venue. And it will be electric. I was there for a lot of the great endings. And tonight, the stakes are going to be high because both teams have ambitions to get into the playoff. And I think that it's a great coaching matchup. It's a great traditional matchup. I like Notre Dame at home. I think it's just when they run the ball, their defense has been really difficult, had a difficult time. But the atmosphere is really hard to beat. Even in, you know, even in South Bend, where I think sometimes the home field advantage isn't mm-hmm. all that it's cracked up to be because it's such a tourist attraction, I think Notre Dame prevails tonight.
It's an interesting time, college football, right now, if you live in Chicago, because Notre Dame is always relevant and good. Illinois is relevant and good. Northwestern is, you know, upsetting some people and building a new stadium, and the Big Ten is good. It's a very nice time for college football in our area.
It is, and yet it still has a hard time getting a foothold because it's such Bears-heavy territory, and yeah. I get it, and I've always loved the way that college football kind of fights for its territory in the fall, but it's difficult. It's certainly, you know, in the media space, sports talk radio, it's there isn't a lot of time. The Cubs just wrapped up. The Bears are in a win streak, and you do respect what Northwestern did. They had the upset of the weekend last week. We had David Braun on the Mully and Haw show, and he yep. told us about it, and we talked very little about other things. And Illinois has been relevant. Brett Bielema is a friend of the program, and he's done a terrific job down in Champaign. You just pick your spots, and you hope that you can get to the big stories while they're still big. And I love college football. It was my favorite sport when I came to Chicago, and really that hasn't changed that much.
Yeah, it's great going to the pubs on Saturday, seeing all the Big Ten flags all around. Let's get to the Bears. Here's a question I'm wanting to ask you, because I listen to your show every morning on the way in. Let's say I was a Bears fan and had been out of the country for the past 2 months and not seen a down. How would you describe the 2025 Bears to me in like 30 seconds?
That's a great question. Ben Johnson came to town intent on changing the culture. He is a great communicator with a bunch of creative offensive ideas. He also has a very high standard that he will challenge all his players to meet. Hmm. And through five games, they have begun to meet that standard, match his intensity. And at quarterback, you have Caleb Williams, who is fulfilling the potential or beginning to become the quarterback that we thought he could be when he was drafted first overall in the 2024 draft. All of the credit starts with the head coach, because coaching matters in the NFL, and you're seeing that firsthand in Chicago.
Yeah, I think that's a really good breakdown. And I look at the team right now, and you know, they could be 1-4 if you went back and really nitpicked it, the blocked field goal, the turnover by Jalen Daniels, but they could be 4-1 as well. What do you think, as a former football player, is the difference between 1-4 and 4-1 in this situation?
About a handful of plays in each game. You know, you look at both the Cowboys and the Raiders, and those could have been losses. And, you know, in Vegas, they were more lucky than good, you could argue. And then against the Commanders, they made their own luck by creating turnovers. And so I think that the best thing about the NFL is that it truly does represent parity. And it is what the commissioners have always wanted, not just Roger Goodell, but Tagliabue and Roselle. They wanted this kind of evenness. So if any given Sunday is more than just the name of a movie, it's an actual way of life in the National Football League. And so that's what you get. And you're right. The Bears could be 1-4 right now very easily, and it'd be a much different narrative in town. Frankly, because we have to talk about them every day, I'm glad they're not.
It does feel a lot better. And I'm going to get to your job as being the morning show host in a second. David Haw joining us on the tailgate. One thing that really, I guess, positive from the Washington Commanders game is I went in thinking, oh, how do they stop the run and how do they run the ball? And both of those things seem drastically improved. Maybe it was for a night. But if you think of those are the two holes on the Bears where it felt like this could be a problem chronically, or at least the length of the season. It seemed to get cleaned up a little bit the other night.
It did, because every great defense and every game, you have to start with a plan. And to have a plan, you have to be organized. To be organized, you have to have a leader. And when T.J. Edwards came back, not to overstate his significance, but he took over a middle linebacker, and he was calling signals, and frankly, his value, maybe his greatest value, is making sure everybody's lined up and they're in the right defenses, they're in the right gaps, they're taking the right angles, and that can shut down even the best of running games. And that's exactly what happened against the Commanders, is that this Bear defense knew exactly where they needed to be, and they were disciplined.
It's funny that you say it like that, because we had him a name drop here. We had Marcus Freeman, the head coach of Notre Dame, yesterday on the Dan Patrick Show. He said speed on defense is about knowing where to be, not how fast you are. He said if you know where you're going, you're going to get there faster. If you're just running around the field, anyone can run around the field. All right, I want to get to the big topic, the Troy Aikman situation. It's been a couple days on your show. I've been listening. I've been texting you during your show, bothering you with it. But it's interesting because I listen to that broadcast. I work on a national show, but I'm also do a sports show in Chicago, and I'm a Bears fan. So I've got a couple different layers when I watch stuff like this. When I watched Aikman the other night, I thought he was critical of Caleb Williams, and it felt fairly critical. As a player who I played freshman football, that's when I peaked. I have to trust Troy Aikman to a point. When he tells me Caleb Williams needed to put the ball 2 yards ahead to keep him running, I have to trust Troy Aikman as a fan watching the game. Now, a lot of Bears fans seem quite upset with this. When I listened to your show the other day, it felt like you were trying to be the voice of reason and say, hey, here's what Troy's doing, not just jump on the bandwagon and say Troy hates the Bears or Troy hates Caleb Williams. How was that doing that job the other morning?
Well, difficult, because I do think that fans have every right to feel as betrayed or wronged as they wish, because that is what passion and believing in your team and loving the Bears is all about. And my job is not to necessarily be a fan. Some people would love me to be more of a fan, but I'm an analyst more than fanalist. And I think those guys are great for some guys, but what Troy Aikman gives you is an objective point of view. You know, objectivity isn't criticism. It's just giving you what really happened without any kind of slant or bias. And that's the beauty of Monday Night Football, I think. And so Troy Aikman is well-respected as he's got the most prestigious analyst job in football.
Yeah,
he's not anything to gain by favoring one team over another. And so he may have been more favorable to Jaden Daniels because perhaps he knows him more, but frankly, because Jaden Daniels has accomplished more. So I just tried to, you know, and I've, believe me, Paul, I've paid the price for it all week, because
I'm sure
the feedback has been immense and intense. And that's fine, because being a sports columnist in Chicago for a long time prepares you for that as well. But I just feel like Caleb Williams, you know, went to Instagram and all those things. I understand why people would feel that way, but I can pretty much guarantee you that Troy Aikman was doing his job without any kind of bias in mind.
Yeah, I was, as I said, when I drive to the Dan Patrick Show, I listen to Molly and Haw every morning, and I sometimes will text you in the breaks and say, like, here's what I think, and I hope I'm not bothering you, but I also think, like, it was a real touchy topic, a real interesting topic. It's like, you know, I have family members, and I think I text this to you. I can make fun of my family members, but you can't make fun of my family members. And that's what it felt like. Like, the Bears fans are rallying. We can critique our quarterback, but you can't critique our quarterback. The other thing about Troy Aikman, I will say, though, is I think he's gotten to the point where he's like your grandfather who doesn't care if he bothers anyone anymore. I'm just going to call it straight. He's very good at his job. He's been doing this a while. He's got rings. He's got cash. He's got everything. He doesn't have to worry about this kind of criticism.
is the value of experience. And we benefit from that, frankly. And I also think that what happens too, Paul, and I don't want to be critical of anybody specifically, but, and certainly, you know, what it's harder when you're out of town to have the insight that people locally have about any given team. So when Troy Aikman says what he said, people take it personally, and then they start to lump it into the same category as some of the other louder, maybe, opinionists who have takes on the Bears who that aren't, frankly, very accurate and aren't very nuanced. And
I'm with you.
Troy Aikman is much different in the booth. So I think that's the distinction to make, too.
All right, I'm going to let you go here before I know you got a lot. You got TV, you got radio, you're a busy man. You have more jobs than I do. The next five games for the Bears are interesting. You got the Saints, which they say might be a trap game. That's a compliment, because if it's a trap game, that means you've been winning lately. But then you have the Bengals and the Ravens, who are both down this year, quite down. Those are two games where, if you asked me 6 weeks ago, I would have penciled those in for losses. And now they're opportunities for wins. What level of optimism should I have, should we have for the next five, six games?
Same level of optimism you have right now. The Bears have proven one thing. They're learning how to win. They are not the team any longer, at least through five games, that is going to guarantee they will find a way to lose. There's a big difference there. So I think over the next five games, this was an exercise we did the other night on the Chicago Sports Network. I've got them winning 3 out of 5, and I think that's conservative. I think it's going to be difficult to beat the Vikings in Minnesota at the end of that stretch. Mm-hmm. I think even with Baltimore struggling, if they get Lamar Jackson and Roquan Smith back, that's tough out there. But I can see them beating the Saints on Sunday, and I can see them beating the Giants. And I think that you have to trust their ability to beat the Bengals, even in a road venue. So if the Bears are 6-4 after 10 games, they're in the middle of the playoff hunt. They're in the mix, and they're welcoming back the return of relevance to Chicago.
That's great. David, thanks a lot for joining us. Like tuning into you every day. Tell Molly I said hello.
Thanks, Paul. Always appreciate the feedback.
Great to have David Haw on the show. We always like to chop it up. He's my text buddy on football. We run things by each other. You know, I was going back to that Commanders game one more time. The running game was improved. DeAndre Swift really took the ball, literally. The pass rush, not so much, and the defensive against the run was pretty good. I was listening to Raheem Harris and Grody just yesterday. I was driving in from South Bend, and they're talking about the Brad Biggs piece about Montez Sweat. And I think Montez Sweat is getting the criticism he has inherited. Big trade, all that kind of stuff. And it's just, he's becoming a guy, and that's not a good thing. Not a guy or the guy. He's becoming a guy. And I think that's going to be the pressure of the next few games as, you know, the offense is playing a little better. The offensive line seems to be doing a good job. The defensive backs are getting healthier. But guys like Montez Sweat and the pricey defensive line are going to have to step up. That's going to be a lot of fun to see. Up next, our Pub and Grub of the Week. 3 and Out are the morale meter and my Bears prediction. That's next. This is the Tailgate, 670 The Score.
Why does it feel like nobody really gives us the inside scoop? Join us on The Powers That Be, the podcast where insiders from Puck break down who has influence, how they use it, and what it actually means for you. New episodes every weekday. Listen to The Powers That Be wherever you get your podcasts.
We're back with more of The Tailgate with Paul Pabst.
You're supposed to be a professional.
We'll work harder than anybody to win. But man, when we're dead tired in the fourth quarter, winning's got to mean more than just money.
You're hired to do a job.
Job! Job! I don't want no job. I want to play football. I want some feeling. I want some team spirit.
This ain't no high school. You don't have to love each other to play.
It's just what I mean, you bastard. Every time I called a game, you called a business. And every time I called a business, you called a game.
Saturdays on 670 The Score and the Odyssey app.
Back on the tailgate, your boy Paul Pabst is here in studio in Chicago. Rainy weekend ahead. Just check the weather. I thought we were in the clear tomorrow, Tyler. Doesn't look good. It's going to be raining all day today. Looks like it's going to be raining for the tailgate and likely for the Bears game tomorrow. It's going to ease up a little bit in the afternoon.
You think there's been some wet ball drills done in practice this week?
Wet ball drills, yeah. I wonder if they just do that. Do they just hose it down to give it to the center and say, let's prepare for this?
That'd be my guess.
Those kicking balls are really weird. Why do they bring in a different ball to kick?
It beats me.
Why don't they just use the normal one? All right, just to recap, Paul Pabst here, tailgating the score. I am leaving right after the show to head back to South Bend for USC at Notre Dame tonight. Going to be tailgating all day and all evening because that's what I like to do. Getting up in the morning early, heading to Waldron Deck for the Bears-Saints tailgating there. Here's a little tailgate tip for you, Tyler. You're a young man out there. I'm sure you go hard with your bros sometimes. When you get to the tailgate, eat first. Grab a nice Polish sausage with onions and mustard and hammer that thing down. And I don't care if it's 8:12 in the morning. There's nothing better than a Polish sausage at 8:12 in the morning. Trust me. Hammer down a Polish sausage. And then when you start gripping some beers, you got a nice base coat in your stomach. Because if you just start pounding beers, I know you with your natty lights, you're going to get too roughed up too early. You know what I'm talking about?
Oh, I've been there before, believe me.
I've heard about this. So that's my tailgate tip. Eat first, then start drinking. By the way, we do the pub and grub of the week every year on the week here on the tailgate. Usually it's Chicago or the Chicagoland area. I'm going to take it out to South Bend, Indiana. There's a place in South Bend, if you've never been to a Notre Dame home game, it's called the Linebacker Inn and Lounge. It was actually used in different movies. I think they used it in Rudy. It looks like 1977 inside. I think there's shag carpeting at some point in the place. It looks like a time machine. And you can run into a lot of different people there. Mike Golick was there the other day. I think Jerome Bettis is going to be there today. It's called the Linebacker Lounge. It's crazy busy on game day, an old school pub in South Bend. By the way, the movie Rudy, whenever we talk about the movie Rudy, which is all about Notre Dame football and Rudy Rudiger, who went to Joliet Catholic on the southwest side, people have mixed feelings on that movie. On the Dan Patrick Show, we once had Joe Montana on the show, and he's like, Rudy. And he kind of was like, what? He goes, Rudy's a Hollywood version of what happened. And we had Mike Golick Sr., who played at Notre Dame and in the NFL, on the Dan Patrick Show the other day. And he didn't want to talk about Rudy that much. He's like, it's a Hollywood version of what happened there, because his older brother played with Dan Rudiger. But Rudy, great movie. Maybe not necessarily a documentary. All right, Tyler, let's get to it. This is called Three and Out. You have three football questions for me. I don't know what they are. You haven't previewed this with me. I know your parents are listening, so let's nail this, bud.
Let's do it. My first question, you said it's a Bears center question. So here it is for you. Which is more likely Bears quarterback Caleb Williams accomplishes this season? Be the first Bears quarterback to throw for 4,000 yards in a season, or be the first Bears quarterback to throw 30 touchdowns in a season?
I think it's going to be both, and that's not a cop-out. I think it's going to be 4,000 yards. The running game is solid, but not enough. They do a lot of check down passes to Swift and other guys. I think the yardage is going to come. I'm putting him at 4,088 yards as my number, if you want to check back.
I love that.
Yeah, and it's wild. And I really hope that Caleb Williams, not just being a Bears fan, but being objective, I kind of hope he gets 4,000 yards so we could put that off the Chicago sports history list forever. Because my friends and people in the media who goof on the Bears, they always point to, you guys have never had a 4,000-yard passer? Didn't you guys invent football? Didn't your owner invent the NFL? And you still don't have a 4,000-yard passer? All right, number two.
Really quick before it gets number two, because I did the math for what he's done in the first five games. If he's on this pace he would be on now, he would end with 4,008 passing yards.
All right, I feel
30.6 touchdown passes.
Well, that'd be fine.
Unbelievable, right?
I would love 30.6. Oh,
I'll take anything. Number two. There are a lot of very interesting and intriguing matchups in the NFL this week. Outside of Saints-Bears, what is the game you are most excited to follow or see how it shakes out?
I would say Colts versus Chargers. The Colts are surprisingly 5-1. The Chargers lost a couple, and they could have lost last week. The Chargers are 4-2. A lot of people love them. I don't think anyone nationally is taking the Colts seriously yet. The Daniel Jones thing, it's like, oh, this is a nice story. This is a nice September story. We're almost in November. We're getting to be mid to late October. Hey, Bruce Levine. Bruce Levine just walked in. Love Bruce Levine. He's going to talk some baseball. I'd say Colts Chargers. If the Colts can win this one, I think you're going to have to start looking at them as a threatening team, and nobody does so far.
That's a great one. That is a great game. I've got my eye on that one, too. Should we do number three?
Yeah.
Let's do it. Last week, Penn State made a statement to the college football world by firing head coach James Franklin. With this now being the biggest vacancy in the country, who do you think will be the new head coach of the Nittany Lions in 2026?
There are some names out there. I've thought a lot about this. I love college football. Matt Rhule is expected to be in the mix, the Nebraska head coach. He played at Penn State. That's the obvious pick. I don't think Marcus Freeman of Notre Dame is in play in any way. I actually don't believe those reports that they're interested in him. I mean, that they're interested. I don't think there's been any contact. Marcus Freeman would be insane to leave Notre Dame with what he's got going on right now. They're independent. They make their own schedule. All they need is 10 wins and they're in the playoffs. Don't ever leave Notre Dame. Ask Brian Kelly what it's like to leave Notre Dame, the comfy confines of South Bend. He's doing okay at LSU. Not great. So I would, I'm going to go with Mike Elko, the Texas A&M head coach. He's very good. He's got some connections to South Jersey, and he's a little bit off the board, but he's got A&M back. And A&M could afford a lot. they spent like $70 million on a buyout for Jimbo Fisher a few years ago. But I think Mike Elko is my wild card pick.
I did not see that one coming, I'll be honest.
I try to go off the board to impress you a little bit. That is three and out. This is the score, 670 the score. This is the tailgate. Let's go to the morale meter for the Bears. It's my own, how's morale of Bear fans around the country and, of course, locally in the Chicagoland area, as they say, for people in the suburbs. I had it at 7.1 out of 10 last week. I'm only bumping it to 7.4. Close win against the Commanders. I'm still one of those measured Bear people that says, you could be 1-4, you could be 4-1. But I don't believe in luck that much. You make your own luck. You stay in games. You don't give up. Josh Blackwell with the tip, you know, on the kick against the Raiders. That wasn't an accident. He did it. The special teams coach saw stuff. The long snapper saw something, gave him a tip. You know, the fumble with Jaden Daniels, handing the game back to the Bears. You still got to close that game. Your backup kicker still has to make a kick in awful weather. They won it. They stole it. So I'm going to bump it up to 7.4 for the morale meter for the Bears. The ghost of the Commanders, the Hail Mary game is gone, thank goodness. Tyreek Stevenson is the most relieved man in sports after last week. I was really hoping that Tyreek Stevenson would have a pick six. That would have been a redemption. He's playing pretty well this year, last few games. I'm curious to see how his career goes.
In a way, though, I'm kind of happy he had a relatively
quiet,
low-key game. He got called out once for the one blown coverage, but other than that, you really didn't hear his name much, which was kind of nice.
Yeah, it was a nice, quiet win for him. All right, real quick, we'll go over the scoreboard before we make our picks. Rams versus Jaguars, the early game in London. Man, these games are tough to get up for, but that's a good one. Browns hosting the Dolphins. They're both at 1-5. Every week I say this, the Dolphins are going to fire their head coach at some point. The Patriots at the Titans. Patriots are looking really good. Check them out. Drake May is playing well. Raiders at the Chiefs. Chiefs are 3-3, but they feel better than that. They feel like they've righted the ship, and I think they're getting wide receiver Rashee Rice back this week. Eagles at Vikings. That's a fantastic one. The Eagles, a little rocky lately, and the Vikings, I trust their coach, Kevin O'Connell. I don't know if I trust their quarterbacks, either of them, that much. It'll be curious to see what that team does the next few weeks. Panthers, Jets, that's ugly. Panthers look a lot better. Giants at Broncos this week. I've always liked the Broncos this year. The Giants are getting better. Bears fans should check that game out because you got the Giants coming up. Colts versus the Chargers. We talked about that a little bit. Colts look really good. Chargers, I had them as one of my favorites before the season. They've slipped up a little bit, but I don't make too much of that because it's middle of the season. Commanders, Cowboys, one of those teams is going away. The Commanders, Cowboys 2-3-1. Falcons, 49ers, Buccaneers, Lions, Monday Night Football, Texans, Seahawks, Monday Night Football. My Bears pick. I think the Bears grew up a little bit last week. Run game, run defense. Big improvements on both sides of the ball. We're not going to overlook a bad Saints team, but I see a nice, clean Bears win. I'm going 31-17. I heard Layla last night say that yesterday on the score, everyone's picking 17 points for the Saints. Great weekend in Chicago coming up. Heading to Notre Dame right after the show. Heading to the Bears tailgate tomorrow. Tyler, thanks for hanging this morning.
Fantastic show.
Good time. Thanks for listening to Tailgate. Huge weekend ahead. Go to a game. Go to a pub. Host a football watching party. Have a pull of sausage at 8:12 a.m. It's good for you. This is the Tailgate. I'm Paul Pabst. 670 the score.
Felt like you were living just a B or B plus life? It's so dangerous to live that, more dangerous than a B minus or a C plus life, because when you're living a B or B plus life, you don't change it. You think it's good enough. Is it? I'm Susie Welch. I host a podcast called Becoming You. People think, okay, an A plus life is not available to me, but there is a way. We are all in the process of becoming ourselves. Listen to Becoming You wherever you get your podcasts.